we have adopted the CS as the working document. That does not necessarily mean that we move it out today, but we have accepted it, so, as a committee. Representative Green.
Just for the record, the fact that we've heard it, if there is still some heartburn with it, then I think we should hear it again, just because we don't want to. I know I labored through a bill for 4 hearings before it finally moved out, because there was concern about it. By the same token, I think what we're hung up on now, unless I'm mistaken, is the legal portion of this rather than the humanitarian or social issue. And because of that, and because of what we've heard from the chair of the Judiciary Committee, I would be willing to move it out.
My response to that is absolutely. This is State Affairs Committee, and I believe that we have covered our responsibility on this bill. I suspect that the decision that each one of us needs to make is this. Would this bill have a negative effect on the affairs of the state? Is it something we don't want to go any further at all, period? Quit, end of sentence? Or are we concerned that there may be a way that this could be a good for the affairs of the state, in which case we don't know about the legal amounts of it, and that might not be addressed in judiciary? Representative Green?
On that basis, Madam Chair, I would move that committee substitute for House Bill 199, State Affairs, version F, be advanced or be passed out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note or notes. Note, I guess.
Is there any objection?
No objection.
Okay, then would you please call the roll?
Just a comment. After listening to all the testimony, I'm really torn, but I'm willing, from my perspective, to allow this to go on to judiciary to cover the points raised by Representative Green and some of the others. And at that point, I'd probably be more prepared to know how I would finally vote on it. But I will personally not object to seeing it go to the next committee of referral.
And Representative Green, your motion is with individual recommendations.
Yes.
Representative Robinson.
And just, again, the reason I'm objecting is because I truly believe that we have had testimony, and I trust the Department of Law on this, that we have adequate laws on the books to do exactly what Representative Ogun wants to do. And I believe very strongly that we need to quit creating more laws and that and more regulations, and that we need to try to live within what we have. And so I just want to state that for the record, that's my main reason for objection. And if there had been testimony to the contrary, that there was not laws on the books and that we could not prosecute in these situations, then I would be supporting moving this bill forward. But I just believe it's on the books at this point. We don't need to be doing another law.
Thank you. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Brian Porter.
Yes.
Representative Karen Robinson.
No.
Representative Ed Willis.
Yes.
Representative James.
Yes.
Representative Ogun.
Yes.
Representative Joe Green.
Yes.
Okay, so the bill is moved. Where's my folder? Thank you all for your diligence.
No, what you heard was this is strictly for school.
And next we have HB2, Boot Camp for Nonviolent Offenders, Representative Willis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know what I didn't do? Did I get everybody that I was supposed to on that? I guess I did, by accident. I'm not looking at my sheet here. have Jerry Schreiner. Is he still here? Oh, okay. Well, we may get to him or not. We may or may not get to him, but he might want to listen to. Representative Willis, go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In 1993, I introduced legislation relating to boot camps for nonviolent first-time adult offenders. The bill before you today is the refined version of that 1993 bill. It represents the work of the 18th Legislature's Health, Education, and Social Services Committee and contains changes and suggestions requested by legislators, correction professionals, and other persons interested in the legislation. I feel that placing nonviolent first-time felony or misdemeanor offenders in a prison setting is not the best way to accomplish rehabilitation of this offender. Providing an alternative to prison time and an opportunity to learn discipline and acceptable behavior will offer these offenders a chance to avoid further encounters with the law. The bill before you would offer the boot camp as an alternative sentence option for first-time convicted felons or misdemeanants under the age of 26. Individuals convicted of crimes such as homicide, assault, kidnapping, sexual offenses, and offenses involving the use of deadly weapon would not be eligible for this sentencing option. The emphasis here is on nonviolent first-time offenders. At least 24 states currently operate boot camp programs. As can be expected, each state offers the program to different groups. For example, in 1993, Virginia's program was limited to nonviolent male felony offenders 24 years of age or under, and did not allow felons convicted of murder, manslaughter, kidnapping, sexual assault, and so on to participate in this program. Massachusetts program in 1993 was for male offenders under the age of 40. I have submitted to the committee various articles and studies concerning boot camp programs. I believe that a boot camp program could help us address many of the problems from prison overcrowding to recidivism rates. A boot camp program has the potential of providing us with many long-term benefits. I would urge a positive consideration of this bill. Having made my opening statement, I would like to point out that despite information to the contrary, the bill before us today does not have an upper age limit of 26 years. This was an earlier version and was deleted at the request of the previous information, and when I had the bill sent over, I didn't pick up on this until several days ago.
Okay.
So that would be one of the caps that I would like to put back into the bill because this cap actually is the cap that many other states use, and in legislation that is currently being discussed before the federal Congress, that usually 25 or 26 years is the age. And also, I just talked yesterday with Mr. Schreiner about this bill as a representative of the incoming administration, and there was a concern that the administration had in Section 1, and I know time is running short, and I would ask the chair perhaps that you would allow me some discretion in working with the administration on several of the points that they brought up and to put back into the bill this age cap.
Okay. I have no problem with that, Representative Willis. I think this is you've got a good start here on this bill. Is there anyone has any objection? Another week, would you be able to have?
Yes.
Is there any comments anybody would like to give Mr. Willis, Representative Willis, before he does this and work with the administration to get the language so it'll be more compatible? Representative Green.
Thank you. I think that's a great idea. I'm concerned, though, as to the fiscal note that's attached from corrections. If this, in fact, now this is for my own edification, apparently. If these people are going to boot camp, would that be in lieu of other incarceration? Seems like that would be less expensive than conventional, so that there almost ought to be a positive fiscal note. Certainly, I'm wondering about...
Well, I think, as I understand it, and perhaps Mr. Schreiner could address it, that there is no facility now, and the fiscal note addresses the building of a facility. Am I not correct, Mr. Schreiner?
My name is Jerry Schreiner, Special Assistant to the Department of Corrections. That's correct. This bill, as well as most other states, and as well as the federal legislation, particularly the most recent omnibus crime bill, which would in fact, or may in fact, provide some funding if the state were to take this course, would require a separate facility, or at least a detached separate facility on the grounds of a current prison system. In other words, people to qualify as a boot camp in this bill and in most other programs, individuals in the boot camp could not be mixed in with the general population because it doesn't fit with the whole theory of why boot camps are beneficial, why they work. So to that extent, and in our particular situation, if one requires a boot camp to operate, we would necessarily have to build another facility because we have no room in any facilities that we could convert to the use of a boot camp. We have no wings, no units, no anything in any existing facility, and that would include our Point McKenzie facility, which is 84 people in it now. So there's no place that we could convert to use without capital costs. So yes, there is a fiscal note to this.
Well, and my question to that is that I agree that there ought to be, and it looks like capital expenditures of $5 million. But what I question is the $2,062.3 in the upcoming years, and I assume that is from the operation. Are you telling us that it would be that much more expensive to have them in boot camp than it would be to have them in other incarceration?
No, I'm saying that if we built a 50-bed facility of any kind, whether it was a boot camp, a medium security facility, and that's what we're suggesting, is a medium security type facility for a boot camp. But if we simply built another institution, that would be operating costs for that institution. In other words, we do not have the capacity, we don't have the physical capacity to convert existing facilities to this, nor do we have staff that if we took 50 people out of the existing system and said, okay, these people are eligible for this program, we're going to take those out of our existing 15 facilities and we're going to put them in the boot camp, it would not reduce any existing prison to the point where we could reduce the staff. This is, unfortunately, is a new program.
On the bottom, on the line of that then, are you saying to us that this would be on top of the amount of money that we're already doing to incarcerate people, that this number of people would be so few that you wouldn't notice a difference in the cost of the other operation to offset over into this one?
We based the fiscal note on a count of individuals in our prison system on the day that it was done, which I believe was about 30 days ago, perhaps a little more. We had 255 people in the system who would qualify for this boot camp. Given the other conditions of the bill, these people would move through a boot camp facility faster than they move through our current prison system because of the sections in the bill that relate to discretionary parole and so forth. So there would be no need to develop a facility that would hold the whole 255. We could account for the number of people coming into the system and out of the system that have created this group of 255, we could essentially handle that same number of people with a bed, with a facility of approximately 50 beds.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then, do we have any of these qualified for this bill incarcerated currently?
Yes, we have about 255 of these individuals who the commissioner, if the commissioner were to look, under the conditions of this bill, if the commissioner of corrections were to look for a population, she could identify about 255 people who would fit in this program.
If I might follow up, that's where I was coming from. If that's the case, is it fair to burden this bill with the entire cost? Because in effect, what you're saying is we're freeing up hard beds in a more restrictive incarceration area to allow some of these people to go to a less restrictive, less expensive incarceration, but we're burdening that group with the cost of building a new one. It seems to me that that should be spread, and the people that we're then opening beds up for harder crimes should be taken into account on the fiscal note. What I'm concerned about is that with the current legislative attitude of not wanting to spend money, that could be a death knell to this, where it may in fact be very much to the benefit of the state.
Well, we share that concern, and in fact we will be, the federal government is currently revising or refining and developing its regulations for distribution of capital money from the most recently passed federal crime bill. Some of that money is earmarked for boot camps, specifically, as you have mentioned, on the theory that to move these offenders into a boot camp facility allows a system to create more hard beds for more serious felony offenders. In a system such as ours, which is already over maximum capacity, and we've only recently gotten below emergency capacities, there is no room. Even if we take these people out of the system, we're going to be very near our maximum capacity anyway. So if you spread 255 people across 15 institutions, no place is going to go down to the extent where we can say, okay, now we can close a wing and save some money. I would like to do that. It simply is not in the cards. We can't do it.
Representative Green.
Somewhat in jest, but somewhat in seriousness, too. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Why don't we show we're offsetting the contempt of court citations then by reducing our overcrowding through this process, and that is a benefit to the state?
Well, at this point, Representative Green, the department's position is right now that given the current supplemental budget, we don't intend to pay those fines. That's what we're telling. In fact, I believe the commissioner's in another hearing right now essentially telling Finance Committee that given the current supplemental budget, we don't intend to pay the fines, so there's nothing to save.
Representative Porter, you have a question?
I just, in response to that, we haven't determined to whom we're supposed to pay the money.
Maybe Ms. Knute can answer.
I guess what Jerry just said is basically what I wanted to point out, that if Department of Corrections had control of the client population that they possess, then they could do the kinds of things that we're asking them to consider. They don't. They get their clients from another direction, out of their control. And having been involved in that spigot, I can tell you that as soon as those 250 went to this process, which I think is a very good idea, it isn't logical for them to be.
One more question, and then it's 10, and so we're going to have to put this off.
Yeah, and
Representative Robinson.
And I didn't expect maybe a question, for you to answer the question at this point, but it seems to me, and I don't know how you can show it, once you get the system set up, that even though we're filling all the other beds with our more violent offenders, that we're actually saving money by getting the people who are nonviolent offenders into this boot camp. And I don't know how you can, I know it's hard to show, but I mean, it just, because also it's a cost because we've set up another facility, but if we don't set up another facility, we're going to have to set up another hard bed facility, which down the road is going to cost a whole lot more money. Am I correct or am I wrong?
I believe that's correct. And while I don't want to make a promise, after I talked with Representative Willis yesterday, I went back and finished reading some more information that I'd gotten on boot camps, and it turns out there is a private consulting firm on the East Coast that has a computer modeling program, and they found some very interesting things, and they're willing to give us that program. And one of the things that we can do with that is plug in different standards in terms of the certainty of otherwise receiving a prison sentence, the length of time in the boot camp, and a variety of other things, and can in fact project at what point a boot camp becomes positive to a state in terms of reducing prison populations or reducing costs and some of those things. So assuming that this will do what the developer says it will do, hopefully in a week or two we could provide you with a lot better information than we have at this point.
Okay, well, that's what we'll do, and and Representative Willis, if you could continue to work on your bill and probably have it in this committee by next Tuesday, then we'll reschedule. We'll just carry this forward till next Tuesday. And then I have one more thing for everybody to deal with here. I have gotten a request from Representative Cott, who has filed HB 164, which is to establish December 7th of this year as Pearl Harbor Day, and it's been referred to the State Affairs House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs and State Affairs. The House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs has passed out of Military and Veterans Affairs on February 23, but was due to an oversight, was not reported to the full House or forwarded to your committee. So now that the oversight has been corrected, and I'm sure that it will be read across on the House tomorrow from committee to this committee, he's hoping that we could waive it from this committee. So that's the bottom line of my request. I would think that it's fairly simple bill, and that unless anyone has any concerns with it here, I would be willing to waive it from this committee. Is there any objection to that? Would somebody like?
I so move.
All right, then move that HB 164, establishing December 7th of each year as Pearl Harbor Day, is waived from this committee. Is there any objection? Thank you, and this meeting is adjourned.
You, of course, you have to do that on floor. But
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know I
did. Michael Jordan for that position.
Right, right. Thank you. I just can't
yeah,
wait
but I played forward.
Sorry.
Like yeah, oh, no.
Scotty's already got that forward. He's got that nailed down.
So it appears in the ear, and then you're going to be in trouble.
Why the little brand new building?
What do you have to say? Stick with
it. Yeah, that's true. Here's one thing I just wanted to draw. Okay, go ahead. Draw to your attention.